Is this Barstool?
BarstoolSports.com. Is that right? BarstoolSports.com.
It's your boy KFC.
Become kind of a craze. Become kind of a craze.
Your boy Big Cat.
Kind of a craze. Kind of a craze.
And your boy Feidelberg.
So go to BarstoolSports.com. If you do, God bless you.
You listen to KFC Radio.
Presidents to represent
Rock.
Me. I'm out for presidents to represent me. I'm out for presidents to represent me. I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Who wanna bet us that we don't touch letter statues?
All right, welcome to KFC Radio special Death of a President edition. This is the funeral for Dave Portnoy, El Presidente, after he was murdered in cold blood by Chrissy Teigen. So if anything, we learned last night that life can be too short. Life is very precious. So play DraftKings this weekend. Millionaires are being made all season long at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. One-week fantasy means no season-long commitments. Play whenever you want. You got a player who's hurt? No problem. You got a player who gets murdered on the internet by a supermodel? No problem. It won't derail your shot at victory because it's like a new season every week. You're never stuck with the same players. Pick your team in minutes, and you could be on your way to winning huge cash. This season, one listener turned $10 into $5,000. Another turned $2 into $10,000. And a new millionaire is being crowned every week this season at DraftKings.com. You could be the next one. Just imagine. Play fantasy football, win $1 million. Head over to DraftKings.com now and use promo code KFC to play for free in the $10 million Fantasy Football World Championships. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winners, bigger millionaires. Enter KFC now at DraftKings.com. We're all dressed up here, like I said, for the death of our fearless leader. We've heard the press conference. We've heard the rundown. We've seen the squirming. We've seen the backtracking and the spin. The PR spin go into motion. But the bottom line here is our boss got murdered by a very sexy Sports Illustrated chick. And anybody with a brain and anybody who respects the game of Twitter and anybody who respects getting insulted and talking shit on the internet knows the truth and knows what really happened. So we're me and Dan are dressed up all formal for the event to bid him farewell. Fights is in Barstool HQ. This is a little bit of a different look. Should sound a little bit better, look a little bit better, a little bit of a different format, but we got a nice funeral procession for you all today. So, John, you're shaking your head with this.
It was just a real vindicating moment for me. Dave and I have been battling about Teigen for a while. Like he thinks she wants to be the funny, cool girl, which I'm sure in a sense she does. I mean, I want to be the funny, cool guy. Like that's kind of what everyone strives for, I think.
I think she definitely wants to be that girl. I think she just definitely does it a little bit better. I know the girl he's talking
about. You can't say she's not funny. She's a funny chick.
Yeah, there's a lot of girls and a lot of like famous people on Twitter who try to be that funny girl who don't really do a good job of it. I think she does.
I agree. And last night proved it. I mean, that was big time. She wasn't even just eviscerating him. She was killing everyone. Like someone's like, oh, Chrissy Teigen's the girl that searches her name for mentions. And she just goes, no, dude, I don't usually search every fucking variation of the spelling of my name because obviously Portnoy had it just disastrously wrong. And she's like, someone attacked me, you fucking moron. And I never say stuff like that. When I had like 100 followers, I'd respond to people. And now I'm just like, I don't fucking care anymore about like what's going on in my mentions. And I respect that she does. Like, she keeps people honest. If you come at her, she's gonna fucking... Like, I don't feed the trolls. I never do. I never will. But a lot of times I want to. And she just does it.
Dan, your thoughts on the whole matter?
I'm honestly, like, we should pitch it to Sarah Koenig and for Serial Episode 2. Because there are so many holes. We need, a detailed... How many push notifications Dave got in this 27-minute, time frame? Who was tweeting him? You know, how often was his phone buzzing? Where exactly was he? Where was Renee?
I want to interview First Lady.
Renee's in Florida.
That's convenient as well.
Yeah, that's like Christina Gutierrez dying in Serial. It's like, the one person who could answer all this is gone.
So, I still think that there's a lot of questions out there. I still think it's somewhere in the middle. Just like Serial, it's somewhere in the middle. I think Dave, he didn't all out freeze, but I think he saw that his phone was going crazy and he maybe took a peek and was like, I don't know what to do. And then, after a while passed, he's like, all right, well, now I have to say something. The whole thing was fascinating. It was fascinating to watch someone. I never thought I'd see a dead body, but it was fascinating to watch someone get murdered in front of my face. I feel a little bit more like I have some street cred now. We witnessed a murder.
The reaction on Twitter was incredible. It was like a black Twitter reaction with a bunch of white people on Barstool. I had so much fun last night just going bananas on Twitter and reading people's mentions.
I was howling for an hour. Lewis and I were in our apartment. Like, honestly, at one point, I was jumping up and fist pumping, and I was like, I was going nuts. Like, that, when I have the Vine where I'm like, important announcement, I'm like, Prez is dead! That's just a Vine of me in the middle of a rant. Like, that wasn't, it was for the Vine. I knew it was coming, but that was just my emotion. That's how I was acting for an hour. I was just, he's dead! He's dead!
It should be a part of our next like advertising pitch that whole night, because to see how much people reacted and how like much sway that one person or a few bloggers can have, I mean, that shit is valuable right there.
I mean, we were saying this, Lewis and I, it's a bit cocky, but at the same time, it's not wrong. I mean, we stole the thunder from the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show.
From the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show, from like everyone waiting for Lester, from the Sons of Anarchy series finale. I mean, whatever was going on Twitter lost to the death of El Presidente.
I'm pretty sure Pray for Prez was actually trending at one point in certain markets, which is hilarious because, I mean, he died. I don't care what he says. I don't care. And John, you were right. I haven't finished the press conference, but I watched the first half. It wasn't Tegan's tweet as much as it was the silence. The silence was when he died. The silence was deafening. It was the loudest silence of all time.
Even if he'd come back and said anything, I think the conversation today is totally different. Even if he doesn't come back off the top ropes, if he just says something, it's not what I'm saying 5 minutes ago. Isn't Tegan goes after people in her mentions, and I respect it, and because she owns them. It's, what the fuck is her deal? Like, why does she care that someone tweeted something about her? That's the conversation, I think. If he just says anything. But the silence, it just, he got buried and it just kept getting dumped on him.
The silence played into it because that's what gave the impression that he was dead. But I still do think if whether it happened right away or 22 minutes later, if he came back with something harder, he at least quiets it down a little bit. At least it's like, oh, we thought you were dead and you're not. I think coming with, I have to say something, I don't think that got the job done.
Although, I'll give him credit, I did laugh this morning when I saw his Jaws tweet.
Yes,
that was funny. It's a beautiful day, the water's warm, Amity, as you know, means friendship. That had me going this morning. That was a good one.
All right, we'll get into the voicemails in honor of El Presidente, his last run here as president of Barstool.
Hey, this is Frank in Hoboken, at the Cooch. So I got a story. A friend of ours, he fucked this chick, and she seemed a little lost, so we did a little investigation on her, found her on LinkedIn, blah, blah, blah. Turns out she was a nun in training. She had been going to the nunnery for like 2 years, and he banged her. What do you guys think the eternal ramifications for fucking one of God's daughter nuns is? All right, I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Fucking a nun. This chick had been going to the nunnery, nun school, convent school, whatever that's called. She's been there for 2 years, and this guy takes her down. Would you feel guilty about that? Do you think the big guy doesn't like that? Would you be turned on by fucking a nun? Just nun fucking in general.
First of all, this is the plot of Saving Silverman.
Yep.
great movie.
Second, a criminally underrated movie. Underrated.
It's always on like TNT, TBS. I'll watch it every time. Amanda Peet looks smoking.
It got like a half a star or something, like just ridiculously low.
I love the whole Neil Diamond subplot. I think that's hilarious.
And the gym teacher who's a murderer. It's just gold.
Did he just fuck this chick, or did he say he's dating?
Fucked her, I think.
Okay. Well, I don't think there are any eternal damnations then. It's on her, maybe. I don't think it's on him. It's not on his head. You know, he didn't know.
Dan?
I mean, this came up yesterday in the rundown, and I might have surprised some people, but if you believe in God, I mean, it's the most foolish thing in the world. And I'm not saying that religion is bad. People who are religious people, I respect, because I understand the benefit of religion, you know, teaching you how to be a moral person, a sense of community, all that shit. But the actual existence of God is total bullshit. So
now,
no, nothing's going to happen.
Now, I agree with you on that, Dan. I totally, you know, I go about my daily life thinking there's no such thing as God. But I often think, if you put me on a stand, I don't know that if I could lie.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Like a stand where I have to swear on a Bible.
That you don't believe
in
God?
That's going all in. I'm 100% positive that this isn't real. I'm 99.9, but I don't know if I can sell my soul for that 0.01.
That, to me, is more superstitious than anything.
Yeah, that's not that you believe that there's a higher power that's, like, going to smite you down with a lightning bolt or something. That's just like, I can't really say for sure, and I don't want to be that guy who's like...
You believe in karma. I believe in karma. I think karma is kind of a real thing. Maybe not, like, there's no direct karma one for one, but I do think that, like, the better you treat people, the better you're going to get treated kind of thing. Like, what goes around comes around.
No. You cannot and not believe in God. If you believe in the mumbo jumbo, you believe in the mumbo jumbo.
No, I think karma's different, though, because it's more like... Listen, I do think it's stupid, like, oh, yeah, good things happen to good people, because a lot of bad shit happens to really good people, too. But I do think there is, like, a sense of if you treat people well... You will get, like, you know, people will treat you well in return just because they see you. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I understand what you're saying, that it's a little contradictory here.
I can understand the idea that, like, if people see how I behave and I'm behaving nicely, that they'll be, I get that. There's no, like, some stranger who's never met me before is going to do me a solid because I am a nice person. No.
That's all bullshit. Okay. I mean, I believe I'm superstitious, but yeah.
If she started dating him, that's a different story. Not for God's smitings and whatnot, but just imagine dating a girl who you convinced to leave the nunnery.
Well, I would feel like the fucking man if I banged some chick out and she was like, I need this. I need that dick in my life.
But for the rest of your life, you're not being compared. Like, when you date a chick, when you marry a chick, she's always... comparing you to her brothers, to her dad, to other men in her life that she grew up with. If you convince a chick to leave the nunnery, you're being compared to Jesus. That's how good you need to be, that whole relationship. You need to be, I gave up God for this, this guy better be God.
Yeah, that's
that's the level you need to live to.
That's actually a good point. I don't think you can ever really date anyone who's about to be a nun or a priest in the year 2014 is a fucking psychopath to begin with. So you just don't want to get into bed with that for a long-term relationship, period.
Right? See, I kind of disagree, though, because if a nun is about to be a nun and she fucks you, she didn't want to be a nun in the first
place. Well, that was my original thought about, like, let's say there was a god or whatever. I think you're doing everyone a solid. I think you all dodged a bullet, because I think this girl wasn't nun material. But as far as dating one afterwards, whether it's true or he exists or not, if you're just crazy enough to think that way... I don't want anybody.
You're probably a fucking vixen in the sack.
Hey, this is a funeral. Have some respect. Get down. You see this? Look at him. Just up on the table like a fucking clown.
What the fuck?
Get down, dude. God. Have some respect. Alright. So, long story short, if you want to be a priest or a nun, you're crazy. If you believe in God, you're crazy. And you should just fuck anybody, even if they're training to be one of those people.
How about discussing some deity on KFC Radio?
I'm telling
it up
you,
with that.
Know, everyone thinks it's all like poop and fart and masturbation jokes, and it's 99% that. But the 1%, we'll give you some culture. Let's start with this. This is creepy as shit.
What's going on, fellas? JD from CT. I got a story for you guys that I don't know if it can ever be matched in creepiness. When I was back in school, my roommate, he had been going on a little cold streak, you know, so he was getting in that desperation mode, and one night, he was literally students, and he was like, he wasn't getting on the bus, and he wasn't like getting off. He was just waiting for girls to get off the bus, and he'd go after them from there. And he ends up finding one, and he texts my other roommate and says, "I'm coming back right now. Close your eyes." So that just gives you an idea of the kind of creature that he brought back. I'm just wondering, what's your guys' creepiest story of a friend trying to pick up girls? Or
all right, dude's on such a cold streak, he just goes trolling the bus stop for girls. Not getting on the bus, not getting off, just waiting for girls to show up, and starts kind of spitting games with them. Ends up taking such a disgusting troll home that he asks his roommate to close his eyes so he doesn't know how gross she is. I think sitting by the bus stop waiting for like girls to get off is as much of like a rapist assault sort of behavior as possible.
Hang on. Is this, he doesn't clarify, not that I heard, would we guess this is a college kid, or is this a kid going to a Boston bus stop?
I guess he doesn't really specify. I would say if you're a college kid, you wouldn't need to stoop this low.
Either way, if you're waiting at a bus stop for women to get off, that's like one step away from rape.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's so many levels before that where you could just like go to a bar at 4 a.m. and pick up the really drunk girl, which is like, that's pretty scummy too, but it's not like I'm going to patrol the bus stop for like random strangers who are unsuspecting. That's low.
That's bad. That's really bad.
Here's, I don't think it's that bad.
Yes, you do, John. Yes.
Because, no. Well, here, I think it's kind of smart. Because here's my thing. I'm an orator. I'm a conversationalist. That's what you're going to like about me. My looks aren't going to grab you. Like, we're at a bar. My dance moves, you're not going to be like, I need to fuck that guy because look at his hips go. What you're going to like about me is talking to me. You're going to find me interesting and hopefully a little funny. So I need that enclosed space where you can't go anywhere. You got to talk to me. Like, you can't get away. You can't walk to the other side of the bar. You can't get another guy. I need to kind of trap you. And eventually you'll kind of just accept, like, all right, he's not that bad a guy. So I think on a level, maybe I wouldn't choose a bus stop, but I like this idea of trapping a woman and making her talk to you.
Okay, that sounded really rapey. I get what you're saying, though.
That person. And I also don't think he was getting girls that were coming off the bus. I think he was getting girls, like, I think he was just kind of sitting there. Because if you're getting a girl who's coming off the bus, she's already home. Yes. If you're getting a girl who's there, you'd be like, where are you going? I'll bring you.
You got to, like, Forrest Gump this shit. And as everyone's waiting for it, you're just creeping on them.
Yeah.
I also think the second half of the story is a little underrated. Taking home a chick who's so ugly that you ask your buddy to close his eyes. Like, I can't imagine being that disappointed in myself that I just wouldn't care enough.
Let's back something up here for a second. Do we think this guy's sober?
I would imagine just because
that's the creepiest thing of all time.
Yeah, because I don't think you would go drunk to the bus stop where you know the other girls are sober. You're not going to get like drunk chicks coming off the bus.
So he's having sober sex to break up his slump? This guy's fucking like got a loose, like, dude, that is psycho. You break up a slump by getting really drunk and losing all your inhibitions and all your, you know, levels of hotness, and you just grab whatever. Like, sober? Come on.
The fact that he told his roommate to close his eyes, I think leads me to believe it's a college kid. Because now, if I take an ugly chick home, I don't fucking care. Like, yeah, I had sex with an ugly girl. Like, I'm not going to tell my roommate. That was the thing in college. Like, oh, you look at this ugly chick you fucked. At this point, it's like, oh, I fucked at least.
Right. So
that's why I think. So that's why I think he's in college. So that's why I think he was like just hanging out at the bus stop, picking up a couple chicks coming home from the bar. I think it all works out.
Sober. If it was sober, this guy is the creepiest guy in the world. That's all I'm gonna say.
I love the dissension there. I mean, that was the fact that Fights is on the other side of this is.
I don't think he is though. He is, but he isn't. Like, you would never do this, John.
No, I wouldn't. I admit that.
Yeah.
But I'd like to apply it to maybe a different scenario.
Okay.
Maybe a different place that's not a bus stop.
Okay.
But I like the idea of,
okay. You know what it reminds me of? Like the pickup artist stuff. Like mystery. An episode of that show would be like, today we're going to pick up girls at the bus stop because it's like weird.
Go to the mall or something.
Yeah, there's just so many more choices before that where you're trying to get out of a slump that I think you can do it in a lot less of a creepy way.
Right. Yeah, no, the guy's definitely crazy. But I like the craziness a little bit. I can see a bit of myself in his craziness.
Like the hustle, but the actual action is it's a little sus.
Correct.
AFC, it's Clemmy. Question for you. Who is your most irrationally heated athlete? Mine is Matthew Slater, the special teams captain for the Patriots. I fucking hate that guy's guts. I have no idea why I interview him after each goddamn Patriots game. My buddy is pretty ridiculous, too. He's Kareem Garcia, former Yankee great. All right, let me know. Later.
Most irrationally hated athlete ever. He threw out the Pats special teams captain. His buddy hates Kareem Garcia. I feel like everybody's got – it might be hard to, like, pinpoint, but just a couple guys here or there that you just really hate for no fucking reason. I hate a ton of guys. I was trying to figure this out in my head. There's a ton that I hate, but I feel like a lot of them are justified. But do you guys off the top of your head have any athletes where you really recognize that it's ridiculous to hate them, but you just can't help it?
And it's just everything about him is just so fucking Cardinals. And I just fucking hate him. So there's my guy.
I hate him too, and I could see being a Cubs fan where it would be like times a million. But yeah.
I don't know that I do. The first thing that popped in the head is PK Subban, who I think the hatred for is irrational. But I get it because he dives. But at the same time, he's such an incredible hockey player that I watch him and I'm like, I can't believe I hate this guy. And he's really cool off the ice too. So it's tough to hate him, but I get why people do. I'm kind of on the fence. I'm swaying towards more liking him now, which is crazy, but it is. I don't know that I have. I'm trying to think hard.
I have one, not a specific player, but I just have a group, and it's completely irrational. It makes no sense. It should be the total opposite for me. It's basically like some form of reverse racism. But it usually ends up being all white basketball players.
College basketball players?
Yeah. Like, I should love those guys. Half the time, they're, like, scrappy and fundamental, and they hustle, and they play smart, and they're not flashy, and they're, like, everything that I, like, ever probably could have aspired to be. But, you know, I think, like, that 30 for 30 is coming out. I hate Christian Laettner. And, like, I hated Kirk Heinrich, and I hate the Plumleys. All of that's a little more understandable because they're the
Aaron
fucking...
Kraft is a
perfect... Aaron Kraft. I mean, I hate him. And K. Marco says to me all the time, how could you hate that guy? He plays the game so right. He's, like, an overachiever. And I'm like, you're correct. But I fucking hate him.
It makes sense because you're connecting him to that guy who played way too hard when you were playing pickup ball. And like, dude, we're just out here fucking having a good time. Like, quit diving all over the place and quit fucking hustling everywhere. So I can see that connect. You're like, oh, I used to play high school basketball with that guy. He was so fucking annoying.
Yeah, I throw like Shane Battier into the mix. I guess honorable white guy. He like taking all the charges and being like kind of like the coach's pet. Even though again, that should be my guys. I should never want to like root for like a Carmelo type, you know. But I just hated all the white basketball players. Made no sense. And Dennis Cook, old Mets pitcher. I just fucking hated that guy. I wanted to set him on fire. The rest of the people I hate. I feel like I could justify, but we're not going to go down that road. We'll be talking for hours.
That's what most of mine are. I don't really.
Yeah.
I hate Garner on the Yankees, but it's not an irrational hate. I just don't like him.
That would be a good one for me too, though. I really hate him because I hate the way like Yankee fans kind of ride his dick when he's just like kind of an average outfielder.
Right. Right. But yeah, he's about it really.
Hated Jabba. Hated Jabba when he was on the Yankees. But that, again,
yeah,
that was just
you can't
just like,
hate him anymore because he's not good. That's the thing. Like, you can't – irrational hate to me is a guy who's not very good. Right. Like, I hate Yadier Molina, but that makes sense because mm-hmm. he's just the worst. And everyone agrees that he's the worst.
Right.
But
– when you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users – receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off the manufacturer's suggested retail price. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the TrueCar mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car that you want. Then, register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. With TrueCar, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the TrueCar mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today.
What's up, KFC? It's Eli out in Los Angeles. Wanted to hear your take on the corporate holiday party season. Everyone's obviously having their holiday parties, getting their plus ones. And is it arguably the least productive day, the day after the holiday party? I'm currently heading into work to find out, so let me know what you guys think about it. Eli.
All right, it's holidays in the cubes, and that means a lot of holiday parties. Fights has never really done the corporate one per se. We did one a few years ago. We went to the Celtics game, and then we just got shit-faced, but it doesn't really compare. Dan, before in your previous life, did you have to endure those things, and any good stories from that?
Yep. I actually had, like, the way it worked for me, because the real estate bubble crashed, so the first holiday party that I went to back, like, right when I was out of college was awesome.
Yep.
It was 100 people. We had, like, full dinner, full, like, open bar. We did karaoke. I killed on karaoke. Everyone was like, whoa, who's that guy? Like, got way too drunk, did the whole thing. And then, unfortunately, because the real estate bubble crashed, every year was, like, a little bit more depressing until – like 2011-12, we literally got like like crackers and cheese at the office at like 4:30. It was just like we all just stood there like drinking a little like white wine from Dominic's grocery store and eating some crackers and cheese. So it petered out. But the first one was definitely like everyone got drunk, the boss got drunk, everyone did that thing, but that was it.
Our first one was at the Waldorf Astoria, and it was like a wedding, basically. It was incredible. And then, yeah, by the end, we were getting pizza in the cafeteria.
Right.
And, like, it was just, like, a section of the cafeteria while other employees were just, like, using the cafeteria for lunch. Like, it was just – it was so depressing.
It's crazy how much companies waste money, because I remember when I first started working in real estate, there would be a party, like, every month. We'd have basically a holiday party every month. We'd rent out a bar, do this, do that. And it's just like just throwing money around.
And what's funny is you kind of get used to them. Like I didn't really like them or need them. But as soon as the market crashed and they weren't there anymore, I was like, oh, fuck this company. We don't even do a holiday party anymore. And morale got like so low because you all thought you were working for like this poor ass corporation.
See, you know, say what you will about Dave Portnoy, but he's a smart businessman in this sense. Because the things you guys are describing, I'm like, that's incredible. Like, you got to do that. You had these huge parties and people celebrated your work and were like, thanks for the great year. Like, hats off to him. Like, it's almost like weird to me that you'd get that. Like, a boss would recognize you.
Well, yeah,
he's just good at being like, this is a job. This is your work and work.
No,
and that's it.
You're a broken man, Fights. He broke you down and rebuilt you like Jason Bourne to be like this blogging machine. And that's just not normal. That you shouldn't just accept that as like, oh, Portnoy is such a good boss. It's probably the complete opposite. It's actually, as a matter of fact, for sure the complete opposite.
Dante was texting me last night about Sons of Anarchy because we had a little spat on Twitter about it. And he's like, you're seriously watching the Victoria's Secret fashion show? Like, why don't you just DVR it? It wasn't even on tonight anyway. And I was like, yeah, but like my job is pop culture. And like when everyone's watching something, I should be too. And he's like, so it's about Twitter stuff? I was like, yeah, it's about Twitter stuff and blogs. And he's like, wow, if that's the case, then I just truly feel sorry for you. he's like, you just can't have a life.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I can. It just has to – that's why I got so fucking mad at Nate too. I was fuming last night about that.
Yeah, I mean, life happens. And in this blog world, you can't really have a life unless it completely coincides with – like what's popular and what needs to be posted on the internet. That's why people are always like talking about how much of a joke the job is, and they complain when we complain. But like shit like that is where it gets like it's annoying. You have to, you can't decide, you can't watch what you want to watch on TV. You can't do what you want to do when you want to do it. It's all around the schedule of like pop culture.
We did the same thing last night, fights. Where we watched the Victoria's Secret fashion show, and then I was up. I actually woke up. I went to sleep, and for like divine intervention, so maybe I do believe in God. Divine intervention woke me up like 2 minutes after the Leicester deal broke. I literally woke up out of a like.
I came to for both of them, so maybe there is some sort of smut gods working, because I wasn't watching the Victoria's Secret thing, kind of as like a fuck you to the blog world fights, like. It's like, you know what? I've been watching Sons of Anarchy forever. There's so many other bloggers that cover this now, so I don't have to like, I'm not like missing out, you know, like I won't be missed. So I'm just gonna put my phone down and just watch. And I just happened to grab my phone like mere minutes after Chrissy Teigen happened. And then at night I just rolled over and checked my phone for Leicester. And like both times I was back at it.
Hey guys, I got a question for you that me and my buddies have been arguing about forever. I think Big Cat's going to agree with me on this one, but you got a full season in the NFL. You got this whole season to do it. You're an edge rusher, full pads, full everything, unblocked to the quarterback every play. Every single play, running, play, pass, play. At the end of the season, how many sacks do you have? I'm saying you got to have over 50, maybe 75. Unblocked, I'm only 6'3", maybe 215, but I'm saying you're unblocked. My friends think I'm absolutely insane, but I need your opinion. Have a good one.
Unblocked every single play, every single game for an entire football season, full pads, full everything, except you're just untouched. How many sacks can you get in a season?
What does he mean unblocked?
Like completely untouched. Just say, you know, like the line just forgot about you. Busted coverage sort of shit. Where you're just coming off the side, right off the edge, full head of steam, nobody touches you.
So I guess the only clarifying question here is: does the quarterback and the coach, do they become aware? Are they like, this guy just unblocked coming off the edge every time we have to start play calling to counteract that, or is it unblocked? There's no like one play happens, you sack them, and the next play they line up and they just don't see you again.
Well, what would be the difference in your two answers there?
Well, if it was the former and they became aware, I don't think you'd get more than like 10 sacks, because they would start throwing screens, they would start doing pitches, they would basically run the whole game plan to run against you being unblocked.
And if there was no self-awareness, how many could you get?
I mean, that's like
every play.
Yeah, that's like, however, if a quarterback passes 50 times, you'd be able to sack him at least like three quarters of the time.
So let's say Kaepernick, someone very mobile, very agile.
Well, then that's tough. But there's other quarterbacks out there. Kaepernick would be difficult just
Rogers,
because
you Newton.
Wouldn't be able to get him. I wouldn't be able to touch Kaepernick once.
Yeah, I mean, like,
but if I played Manning, Brady, there's a long list of guys that are just. You'd be able to hit him, and you'd be able to hit him, and you'd take him down.
There are 25 quarterbacks I'd tackle every play. I assume we're coming on the blind side?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess so.
Yeah, if you're not...
If it's completely blind side, I understand the idea of, like, it'll happen every time. But if there's any sort of reaction time for the quarterback, aside from, like, statues like Peyton Manning, I still think it would be relatively easy for a pro quarterback to shake you off a few times. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
I'd give myself over 50 sacks.
Or first of all, I mean, just depending on how far he's dropping back, you're not going to get to him as quick as, you know, he's going to get rid of the ball a couple times.
Yeah, There's going to be quick slants. There's going to be stuff like that. There are definitely a few quarterbacks too that, like, I mean, I wouldn't touch. You would never touch Aaron Rodgers. You would never touch Kaepernick. I'm trying to think who else.
Russell Wilson, obviously. I probably wouldn't even touch Tannehill.
Yeah, I think any of the young quarterbacks. I mean, even I think a guy like who's terrible, who's still mobile, is going to shake you off or be able to withstand a hit more often than you guys are making it seem.
Yeah, you might be right, but then the games against the guys like Brady, Manning, Carson Palmer, there's other guys out there that I'm trying to think that you would just tee up on, like totally tee up on.
I mean, I'm speaking for myself, I'm probably walking away with zero sacks, but I think like even Peyton Manning being a statue, he's still a 6'4", however many pounds.
Hello.
What?
Yeah, you get me behind a 6'4" guy who doesn't know I'm coming. That's not that hard.
I will say that it's probably somewhere in like the 50 range because you'd have to play those. Say you play the immobile quarterbacks 5 or 6 games, and then the other guys, you know, the really tough guys 5 or 6 games, and then somewhere in between for the remainder. You'd have to really stack up your sacks on the guys that can't move. Because you're right, like. If you put me and Kaepernick in an open field and we're like, and put the sidelines there and you're like, you got to tag him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you wouldn't even be able to play tag with a guy like that.
Right. Yeah. I'd say a little over 52.
Hey, boys. Quick question for you. So my buddy, recent college grad, got his first job, kind of pulled what everybody has always wanted to do. Fuck this 40-year-old boss. Recent divorcee, kind of ended with her. You know, she's a little spiteful about it, a little bit here and there. But just recently, invited to go on a vacation to Hawaii. I think it was some kind of paradise. I'm not really sure. What do you think his play? Does he go? Does he quit? Is this the best thing that's ever happened? Let me know. Viva.
Dude fucks his 40-year-old boss. She's a divorcee, and now she wants to bring him on vacation to Hawaii.
This is another one. Is this The Office? Is he just I feel like the Stoolies are just fucking with us now. They're just going to do plots of like TV shows and movies.
All right, so here's the situation. We found this piece of ember with a mosquito in it, and we've cloned dinosaurs. Do you want to come to our park, or are you scared?
This is his first job?
He didn't really specify. Just said every like young cube monkey's dream. Fuck your 40-year-old boss. I mean, if she's 40, I would say he's early in his career. Let's say he just started out at least.
Here's my only problem. I mean, it'd be really tough to not go on a trip if she's hot and she's your boss. It'd be really, really, really hard.
Paying for everything. You just get a trip to Hawaii.
The only thing that you have to worry about is it's going to end poorly at some point.
1,000%.
You need to figure out how to manage this because contrary to popular belief, I'm a firm believer that people, it doesn't matter what you do in college. It matters what your first job is. And then it matters more importantly, what your second job is. So that jump from the first to the second is the big one where you can get a good recommendation and show that you did something. So that's why you got to be careful in this situation because she could basically submarine your entire career, you know, and basically start you back at zero when you're 24, 25.
Fights?
I think you just got to know what you're getting into. 40 years old and a recent divorcee, like she's not trying to date you. You just want to fuck. She just wants to fuck.
It's a little bizarre that she's willing to take you on a trip then, though, you know?
It's a fucking's better on vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, hotel sex.
Very true.
She's just looking up the ante on the sex. Like, that's, I feel like maybe just mention it to her. Be like, well, this is just, it is what it is, right? Because I don't think she's not looking for a relationship. That's obvious.
She might want to be like under the illusion that she's at least like having a romantic fling or something. If you were just like,
Like, you're treating a 40-year-old divorcee like she's a 16-year-old girl. Like, she knows she's smart. It's not like she's smarter than us.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to feel it out. You got to feel it out. Because
I think, depending on what that first job is, Big Cat, Like, if you're doing something, if you just kind of took a job out of college, you have no interest in it. Or if it's like a bullshit job that you just kind of stumbled into that you have no, you don't care about. Fucking burn that bridge, whatever. Go on that trip, fuck that chick. And if it sets you back to square one, that first step you were taking wasn't really a big one anyway if it was a job you didn't give a shit about. If you're like a law student or something and this is like your first job at a real firm, maybe you just pass on that trip and just say to yourself, I'll fuck another girl in Hawaii at some point in my life.
Well, right? I mean, that's also something to consider, though. Is that going to offend her if you pass on the trip?
Ooh, okay. So maybe now you have to fuck her because you don't want to be the dude who shot her down.
I think the answer this guy is looking for is you go, you fuck her, but you sleep with one eye open. You just know that the other shoe is going to drop at some point, and you just have to get yourself in a good position for that to happen.
I also think if you play it, you like Frank Underwood this shit, and you build a case where if she ever tries to pull some shit on you, you've got the sexual harassment case to go right to HR. You've got to craft a couple texts and emails properly so that it looks like she's kind of seducing you and making it like, if you don't fuck me, I'll fire you or something like that. And then you hold that over her head. And then you just get to fuck her forever and go to Hawaii forever and you don't have to worry about anything. That's what your buddy should do.
Yep. Blackmail's always the answer.
Always. Anytime you can exploit someone's weakness, you do that.
What's up, fellas? Your best Christmas. So for me, mine was 1989. I got a Nintendo. I got a 3 foot long He-Man sword that lit up and made noises. And I got boxing gloves that I used to punch everybody, to include my sisters. So just tell me what your best Christmas was. It doesn't necessarily have to be best gifts. Just for whatever reason, what was your best Christmas? Steven.
Holiday season, Christmas time, right around the corner. Fights, I feel like you're a guy who has a specific Christmas moment in your head or a specific Christmas gift, no?
Shockingly, I don't. I love Christmas, but I've never been a gamer, which I feel like as a kid is always the big gift.
Mm-hmm.
I never really cared about video games. I was always like a clothes and hockey equipment is basically what I got for every Christmas.
You laid out all the generic like Christmas things that you need to happen, like as far as the tree and the cookies and the PJs and the whatever the fuck the Christmas pickle was. I still don't get the Christmas pickle. What is that?
Isn't Elf on the Shelf? You hide it and you find the elf.
No, Elf on the Shelf is a fucking brilliant tool that parents use. You put the elf somewhere and you tell the kids the elf is watching you and will report to Santa if you do anything wrong. So you just scare them into fucking behaving.
Dude, Santa can see it all anyway.
Well, this is, you know, it drives it home. Was it KFC? It might have just been the blog. It might have been mail time. One dude tweeted me a stoolie. He puts his wife's number in as Santa. And then when his kid fucks up, he texts out what he did wrong and writes hashtag naughty list and makes his son press send and text Santa with what he did wrong. And I was like, dude, that is more abuse than Adrian Peterson. That is the most fucked up thing I've ever heard. Text Santa what you did wrong. That's genius.
Diabolical.
Genius, but just fucked up, man.
I once got PlayStation. It was probably PlayStation the original. And I remember it vividly. My dad gave me He brought down a box. I was, you know, when you like know you get something,
yeah.
You're like, all right, this year because everyone's got PlayStation. Don't be fucking poor, parents. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a snobby, shitty kid thing to do to just be like, where's my fucking PlayStation? So anyway, this was the PlayStation year, and I opened the box and it's a holder for the PlayStation, and I was like, and my dad's like, what? That's not what you wanted? Like, you said PlayStation. And I fucking flipped. I was like, what are you talking about? This isn't a PlayStation. This is just a holder. And then, of course, he was like, here's your fucking PlayStation. So
you completely failed that test, son. I was checking to see if you're just here for, like, love and friendship and family. No, you're as materialistic as it gets.
Well, he played it perfectly, like, you know, a stupid dad. Like, what? You said you wanted PlayStation. I went to Best Buy, and I bought the first thing that said PlayStation on it. And it, like, said PlayStation holder.
I got one year, not like a real pool table, but not one of those like Fisher Price pool tables. It was kind of like a mid-range small thing in between. And me and my brother thought it was the coolest thing fucking ever. We played pool on one of those little mini size tables probably every day for like a year straight. We're terrible at pool, never got good at it. But I remember, like, we, you know, came downstairs and it was a fucking pool table. It was like getting a car for Christmas or some shit at that age, you know?
I had one Christmas where I got, like, my presents and I didn't have a big gift. And, like, all my siblings were opening their big gifts. And I'm kind of looking around like, hey, you fucking dickheads, you forgot about me. And my dad's like, hey, John Henry, come help me get something from downstairs. So, and he's all excited. And I can sense it. I'm probably like 13 or so. I'm like, what does he have in store for me? Like, is there a car down here for when I turn 16? And he flicks the light on, and the whole basement's redone, and it's a gym. And he's like, for you. I'm like, I don't give a fuck about this, dude. Like, I didn't ask for a goddamn gym.
That probably cost like so much fucking money. So much time and effort, and you're like, thanks, but no thanks, dude.
When did I ever ask for a fucking gym? I don't need a bench press machine. I'm 13. Look at me at 26. At 13, I hadn't hit puberty. I wasn't considering weight lifting or anything like that. It was the biggest bullshit present. I mean, I went on to use it when I was older, but like at 13, I was like, what the fuck you want me to be excited for this for, dude?
Where's my video games? Where's my fucking
toys? Fun fact about me, I spent 2 Christmases in the hospital.
What ages?
That's a really fun fact, John.
Yeah. I had an appendectomy on Christmas Eve.
Oh, man.
And then
what an inconvenient motherfucker you are.
Dude, right? So I remember, I was like a junior in high school, maybe senior, and I wake up like 10 a.m. Christmas Eve morning, and we always have Christmas Eve at our house, so like my mom's downstairs cooking and shit. I can hear just like a lot of commotion. And I'm like, well, I'd first woken up at like 4 a.m. And if you've ever had an appendectomy, it feels like you got shit real bad, but you can't. So I like went over to the bathroom and I was trying to shit and I couldn't. I'm like, fuck, I'll go back to bed. Like every hour from 4 a.m. to 10 a.m., I woke up in just searing pain, being like, it's Christmas, dude. You can't fucking be sick right now. Just go shit it out. And I'd go back and I'd try and shit again and it wouldn't work. And like finally, I went downstairs and I was like, "Mom, like I'm in a lot of pain. I got a stomach thing going on right now." And she goes, Hannah, my sister, goes, drive him to CVS. He get him some Pepto Bismol. She's like 15 at the time. She doesn't have a license or anything like that. But she's like, "Here are the car keys. Drive him to CVS." And I'm like, "No, take me to the hospital. Like, I'm sick. I know I'm sick. There's a problem with me." Takes me to CVS. I come home with the Pepto Bismol and basically just shotgun it. Like in front of them to show them how sick I am. And I spike it on the ground and I'm like, now take me to the hospital. So they bring me to the hospital. My dad's bringing me. Meanwhile, he's muttering because my mom's been yelling all morning. And he's now muttering to himself like, fucking pussy. Like, it's a fucking hangover, right? Because I was out the night before.
Right.
He's like, it's a fucking hangover. Suck it up. We've all fucking had these before. And I'm in the passenger seat like, just stop yelling at me. And we get to the hospital. And once your appendix is like so swollen, you can't even really stand up anymore. So I go in like bent like an L. Like I'm just totally bent over. And a doctor stands me upright and just grabs me like where your appendix is. And I yelp like a dog who's like getting beaten. Like a really bad yelp. And he just goes, yup, need an operating room. And after I got out, he said it was the biggest appendix he'd ever seen forever.
I would almost want that. I would sacrifice a Christmas just to be able to hold that over my parents' head for the rest of time.
Dude, I was looking forward to it because I had E. coli when I was in fifth grade and I was in the hospital for like 3 weeks.
Kids up.
And it was through Christmas. And you know when you gotta do that bullshit at Christmas when you open a shitty present from your shitty aunt and you gotta fucking pretend to like it?
Oh, yeah.
When you're in the hospital for an extended period of time over Christmas, they don't wait for you to get home to watch you open. So you just get home to a shitload of presents that you get to open on your own goddamn time, and if it sucks, you get to throw it away right away. You're like, I'm never gonna fucking use this thing again. Nope, next. And then you open another one. It's the best opening present experience in the world. It's so just you're honesty.
Your best Christmas ever was the one where your appendix burst and the one where you got E. coli.
Those were two of the better ones, absolutely.
It's a nice family the Feidelbergs have. None of the other ones stick out, only the times where you were deathly ill or in horrific, horrific pain.
You know, I remember the when I had the appendectomy, I was in the pre-op room totally by myself because no one fucking scheduled a surgery for Christmas Eve. And I didn't know anything about surgery. I just knew that the anesthesia was the most dangerous part of a surgery. And that's all I really knew. It was my first surgery ever. And it's just me and the lady in the reception in the middle of the pre-op room. And she just gets on the phone, the intercom, and she's like, paging Dr. Risk for anesthesia, paging Dr. Risk. And I was like, this lady's just having a good time with me. She's bored on a Christmas Eve. Like, there's no way my fucking anesthesiologist's name is Dr. Risk. Knowing that's like the biggest risk imaginable. And this just big burly Russian comes over and he goes, hello, my name is Dr. Risk. I have a good cocktail for you. I swear to God on my life that's true. I started freaking out. My dad wasn't even with me anymore. He'd gone to Christmas dinner. It was just me and Dr. Risk. Your dad just
fucking peaced out at you and left you at the hospital?
It was like, the hospital's not far from my aunt's house, which is where Christmas Eve dinner is.
That's still pretty funny, though. It's like, I'll pick you up a little bit, John.
But nonetheless, he still left. And it was just like me and Dr. Risk, and I just went out. He's like, I have a good cocktail for you. Count to 10. And I started counting. I got to 7, and I was just out until like New Year's.
Well, I'm very happy you didn't die, because if you were dead, and now Prez would be dead, there'd be no more Barstool Boston, as we know it. So you have to carry the torch. You have to as far as internet reputations go, you're the only thing left living at Barstool Boston. So just carry the torch for this website and represent the capital city well. Death of a president, funeral in the books, RIP Prez. Any other thoughts, boys?
No, I was scared sitting up here the whole episode. I'm in Prez's office, and that squirrel scares the fuck out of me.
He might have had a hand in it, too. I think he orchestrated the whole thing. All right, we'll see you guys same place, same time next week.
Is this Barstool?
BarstoolSports.com. Is that right? BarstoolSports.com.
It's your boy KFC.
Become kind of a craze.
Your boy Big Cat.
Kind of a craze.
And your boy Feidelberg.
So go to BarstoolSports.com. If you do, God bless you.
You listen to KFC Radio.